Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing fine, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Threw my back out. I've been kind of crummy this week, but we launched our Patreon after many, many requests of people saying, shut up and take my money. So our Patreon is live, and we will be doing mini episodes, minisodes. I don't know what you want to call them.
Yeah, people are calling them minisodes. Basically, Justin and I will sit down and talk about something. Our first one will be about a hearing that we went to. We went to a hearing for one of the convicted in the Kansas City firefighters case.
We sat in the federal courtroom and listened to the hearing for 4 or 5 hours. It was interesting. So yeah, there's that. We've already posted a premium episode out there, Israel Keys.
To get to our Patreon page, go to www.patreon.com/Generation Y. I also want to thank Patty from Northern Ireland. Sent in a great email, and it was great to hear from you, man. Thanks for tuning in.
So tonight's episode, I feel, makes O.J. Simpson and Robert Durst look like child's play. I feel that those cases, as elaborate and crazy as they are, have nothing on this one. So what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight we're talking about the oil heir, Thomas Cullen Davis, usually referred to as Cullen Davis. He faced two trials. The first, a murder trial, and the second trial, a murder for hire, and he beat both of them. And he beat the charges despite pretty good evidence against him.
He was born in 1933, one of three brothers. His father's oil company, the largest in Texas at the time.
Yeah, Ken Davis Industries.
Growing up was probably a very interesting experience for Colin. Instead of going to like camp during the summers, his father would build a campsite in their backyard that was hundreds of acres, where the kids would be allowed to do archery and canoeing. Later on, when they're old enough to drive, his father would get Colin an Impala, correct? But Colin wasn't happy with this because he wanted a Porsche, not a Impala. But, you know, beggars can't be choosers, I guess. Very rich upbringing, old money, they're pretty much growing up in what I would consider the most opportune, best environment you could ever imagine. But that doesn't really help with some children, as we know, the affluenza situation and other things. Sometimes children aren't really taught general care about others or sharing or things like that. And it seems that Colin might not have learned how to play well with others, as you'll soon find out.
Well, and also he seemed to not appreciate that his father was making him live modestly when there was all this money. Colin had to live at home and drive this cheap car, I guess is the best way to describe it. And even when he gets married for the first time, he's living under his father's roof. Well, the real turning point for Colin is he seems to get tired of being married to his first wife. She's not very exciting for him. He's got all this money and he's ready to start making moves. In fact, he's been collecting things for his eventual dream home. While he's playing tennis one day, he sees a woman by the name of Priscilla, and she really catches his eye. She has these big golden locks. She has a zero waist.
The typical bombshell blonde.
And for her, the way I understand it is she saw him, but he was just another rich guy at the country club. He didn't really stand out to her, but they would connect. And at this time, he was definitely still married, but he was moving on to Priscilla here.
Meanwhile, Priscilla was actually in her own marriage, but going through the divorce process also. So both of them are married technically when they first meet, but going through separation and divorce. They kind of have something in common to talk about, and she's enamored with Colin, and he loves her. He's really into material possessions and name brands, so obviously a trophy wife kind of experience for him is what he's shooting for with Priscilla.
Yeah, Priscilla didn't come from money, but she was taught quite a bit about culture. So I think there was more to her than just looks. She had already been married a couple of times. She had an older child named Dee. Her real name was Angela Dee, but she went by Dee. She was 18 in the year in question, which would be 76. She had a son named Jackie, and her youngest was Andrea. Jackie and Andrea had the same father. Their father was actually the man that she was leaving at the time.
Yeah, he was a car salesman. He was pretty well-to-do. I mean, they were probably middle class, but nothing like what Colin is. There was times that they would hang out together, and she completed the divorce process with her husband, but she was hanging out with Colin in a hotel room. One day the door was kicked in and some private detectives and her ex-husband barge in and throw tear gas or spray him with mace and take pictures of them together. So it was a really crazy situation of her ex-husband coming after her. And you can only imagine that she had other issues with him before this incident. Quite a scene with Jack, her second husband, and these private investigators coming in, tear gassing them, and taking pictures of her running off to the bathroom and taking pictures of Colin, who has no idea what's going on because her crazy ex-husband is behind this whole thing. So she's not had a lot of good men in her life up until this point. I think that that prevented her from seeing red flags with Colin because he's rich, he's semi-charismatic, he's the man with everything. So he's not hiring private investigators to come kick in doors and stuff. So she sees a lot in him and she very much falls in love with him. At that point, they are going to get married in secret. But Colin knows that his father and family, his brothers, are not too into Priscilla because they want the best for their their son or their brother, and they don't accept her as one of their own. They don't accept her into the family very much. They think that she's trashy and of a lower class.
I think that's really what's going on here. I don't know if they're so much concerned about him as much as they're concerned about how she's going to reflect back on their family.
I'm sure they think, well, she's just a gold digger. She's just going to come after us for our money.
And make them look bad in the process, right?
Yeah. And in a way, in their upper class society, she doesn't fit in. She doesn't play the role. She doesn't have the same etiquette and what have you that the rich upper class do. So she would wear short skirts, low cut tops, and she had her favorite necklace that she liked to wear when she was out with Colin. What did that necklace say, Aaron?
Rich bitch.
In diamonds, which, you know, you go into any shop, you know, today and you'll see necklaces that say that, but this is back in the 70s in a very conservative Texas area. This is rock star. This is not fitting into the status quo at all. And people do not like her.
Well, and give her credit. I mean, she's doing what she wants to do. She's not just filling a role. She's continuing to be exactly who she wants to be.
Yeah. So it's like an old money versus new money kind of situation. The day they're supposed to get married, Colin's father passes away. And you would expect them to postpone the wedding, but they do not. It might show his respect for his own father or his uncaring of his father's passing, because this pretty much is his end to go ahead and get married to this woman that he loves without the judgment of his father. He ends up building a house on, I think it's 180 acres of land. The house at the time was, I've heard estimates between $3.8 and $6 million, which a $6 million house in 1975 would cost roughly $27 million today. This home had 20 rooms in it. He had foosball tables, pool tables, top of the line. He had in-ground pools, indoor in-ground pools, 360 fireplaces, just a crazy home on the level of almost like Hearst Castle in the middle of a ranch in Texas outside of Fort Worth. He filled this home with designer furniture, mid-century modern, top of the line. It's said that he bought a entire art gallery out. As he drove past, he just decided, I'm going to buy all the artwork in there and ship it to my home and put it up on the walls.
Yeah, unlike his father, he had no trouble spending the money.
Yeah.
And he had a lot to spend. I think he was worth $100 million then.
Which, if $6 million equals $27 million, then $100 million in net worth, then yeah, it's something astronomical. But all was not perfect in their relationship. They had their issues. According to the media and some people that partied with them, they would have drug parties at their house, at their mansion. And Colin had a temper on him. He liked to win, but he didn't like to play the game. He just wanted to win. So for a nice gift, Priscilla got him a custom-made engraved pool cue, you know, a pool stick. It said that he was out in the pool halls and he kept losing, and he took the stick, the gift that she had given him, and started smashing it against the curb and the walls. Another incident was they were at a hotel and there was a ballroom and they were dancing, and Colin was dancing with another woman. They were groping each other a little bit, and Priscilla decided to call him out on it and stormed off. And he followed Priscilla back to her hotel room and beat the crap out of her for not showing him respect in front of other people. It's a little iffy on how this goes down, but either A, he beat her so bad that she was on crutches, or B, she had actually injured herself on a skiing trip and she was on crutches. But again, they had an altercation, a dispute, and he would actually take one of her crutches from her and hit her with it. Finally, there was an incident where I think it was the daughter, Andrea, had not armed the security system at the house or had left a door unlocked. And he woke her up in the middle of the night and struck Andrea and said, "We always have to lock the doors because people will steal my stuff. Not people will harm us or harm you, but they might get a hold of my property. And that's not acceptable." Priscilla came up to see what the fuss was about, and she was holding her cat, and Colin would grab the cat away from her and smash the cat against a wall until it was dead in a fit of rage. So Oscar Pistorius sort of rage here. It's said that the police were called out to the mansion on many occasions where Priscilla would accuse Colin of striking her and a lot of domestic violence.
Well, this leads to a separation. Both of them would end up finding new partners. Priscilla would meet a man by the name of Stanford Farr, and he was a former Texas Christian University basketball player. He was 6'10", but he was described as a gentle giant. He ran a bar. Colin Davis, he got together with Karen Master. They started a relationship. If we go forward a year or two, we end up in 1976, August 2nd of 1976. Sometime after midnight, Priscilla and Stan arrive back at the mansion, which she has been living in, after a night out.
Also, earlier that day, the divorce courts had found in Priscilla's favor and upped her monthly alimony from $3,000 to $5,000. During the divorce process, Colin was forced to move out of this home that he had built and loved. He was staying with his new girlfriend, and Priscilla was hanging out with Stan that night. And they had dinner, and then they had drinks at the country club, and then they arrived home, not expecting anyone to be there except Andre.
Well, when they get there, Priscilla notices something odd about the security panel. It reveals that a door had been opened while they were out. She wondered if it was her daughter, if her daughter had opened the door, but it just seems strange. And they kind of go their separate ways in the home. As she's heading one way, she notices that the basement lights are on, and that's not normal, not after midnight. And then she sees a bloody handprint on the basement door. So now she's calling for Stan. She heads back down the other way, and out of the laundry room steps a man who's wearing a black wig, black clothing, and had a black plastic bag over his hands. And she hears him say, "Hi." And inside this bag apparently is a gun, and he fires it, and he shoots Priscilla in the abdomen at the bottom of the sternum. So this gets Stan's attention. Stan comes running, but then he obviously knows that his life is in danger, so he heads through a door and shuts it. The attacker tries pulling on the door, but Stan's really pulling in the other direction and won't let the door open.
And he's such a huge guy that no one's going to get that door open if Stan's holding on to it.
But the man trying to get in fires his gun through the door.
Stan screams out in pain because he's been shot.
And he knows he's shot Stan through the other side of the door. So now Stan comes out from behind the door and goes after him, and they're struggling. Priscilla will say that the man, the attacker, steps back after he pulls away from Stan and shoots him. Stan will turn around and fall down right in front of her. And then the attacker shoots him twice more, and Stan dies right in front of her.
She's shot, but she's not immobile.
The attacker picks up Stan by his feet, like picks up his feet and drags him away. And she uses this opportunity to get up and get out. The attacker is trying to stop her from running away. And she says that she looks at him and she says, "Colin, I've never loved anyone else.
we didn't mention it, but I was kind of letting you not mention it because we were trying to sort of not say it was Colin yet. But before he kills Stan, she's actually screaming, "Colin shot me. It's Colin."
After the attacker drags Stan away, she makes a run for it, and she'll hide in some bushes and some shrubs. She hears some voices. A car has pulled up.
She hears more gunfire happening as the other car pulls up into the driveway.
She will run again off the property. She'll have to run over 100 yards to another residence to ask for help. You know, "Please call an ambulance. I've been shot."
So the cops are called. It takes them a while to get there because they live out kind of in the boonies on a 180-acre ranch. The cops will lock down the neighborhood to make sure that nobody's leaving. They enter the home. They find that there's a man named Gus and his girlfriend Bev have been shot at. Gus has actually been shot and the bullets lodged in his back, so he needs medical attention. They find the body of Stanford, and they also find the body of Andrea down in the basement in a sort of a maintenance closet, and she's been shot in the chest. Priscilla is at the neighbor's house, and the paramedics will show up, and they'll be questioning her, and she's pretty with it, and she's telling them, "This is my ex-husband. It was him. He shot me." And they said, "Well, do we need to take you back to the house so you can ID him or something?" And she said, "No, I need to go to the hospital." And that's when they really figured out that she'd been critically wounded with a gunshot wound to the abdomen. So they end up taking her to the hospital.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
Yeah, Priscilla would get a staph infection from getting shot, as well as other complications, including she was still suffering from an ulcer that she was diagnosed with that people said came from this whole drawn-out divorce with her husband, Cullen. The really sad moment comes when the next night at 7:30 p.m., a reverend informs her that her daughter has been murdered.
The police will go to Karen's house, Karen Master's house, and arrest Colin in the middle of the night. And they will take him down to the station. It's said that he's drunk, correct? That he's intoxicated?
Judge W.W. Matthews sets bond at some seemingly low amount. Some people say it's $50,000. Some people say $80,000. The statement from him is, "This man probably will never hurt anybody again. He was just drunk. The police told me he was quite drunk, and they say that when he gets drunk, he gets really mad." What do you say to that? I mean, so if you have someone that has murdered some people, or at least alleged to have murdered some people, we can now just make the excuse that they were drunk and it's a one-time thing?
Like, he was drunk, so he shot a bunch of people in a fit of rage, but now he's sober, so he's probably not as dangerous. It appears that the judge has already kind of got the idea that this man's guilty or actually did this heinous act.
It wasn't just the judge making that determination, really. I mean, he passes that off on the district attorney's office and said, they're the ones that set the price, basically, so I'm just going along with that. Which, $80,000 for Colin Davis? Pocket change, right?
Yeah. Colin will say that he was out at the movies that night watching the Bad News Bears by himself, not even with his girlfriend. He doesn't produce a movie ticket. There's no witnesses from the movie theater that say they saw him there. This is just him saying where he was, and it's kind of accepted. He makes bail, and he gets out. He goes to the airport, where he has a hangar, and he has a private Learjet. The authorities will follow him there and stop him before they take off. He says that he's going on a business trip, but he doesn't have any luggage with him, nothing. It doesn't look like he's packed. He says it's a short business trip, just flying across Texas, or it's just a short distance away, but the plane is fully fueled up. And it is said, I've got some conflicting statements here, that the pilot told law enforcement that they were going to South America.
Yeah, you wonder if the pilot would really say that. I mean, it's like he's giving his boss up.
Well, it was really, they had to ask what was the itinerary, and flight plans had to be documented. So I think that the pilot's like, well, they're going to find out anyways, so I have to tell them.
So talking about flight plans, what was the flight plan? According to the evidence, it says that was for the plane to go to Houston. How much fuel do you need to go to Houston? Well, the jet apparently contained enough fuel to fly 2,500 miles, and that the flight plan can be changed after they take off. So there is some evidence that Brazil could possibly have been his destination. But that's not suspicious that he's going to Brazil, right?
Oh, I mean, his family was just shot at by an intruder. He was arrested for it, but not being forthcoming with the police at all about where he's going.
Maybe he's worried he's next.
Yeah, he's afraid for his life.
So they have three separate witnesses that say they saw Colin Davis.
We have Priscilla, and she's actually screaming at Stan, Colin shot me, run.
And when she's hiding in the shrubs, she sees him go through the gate, and at this point, he's not wearing a wig. So she gets an even better look at him. And then
Gus and Bev pull up. They see him.
Yeah, Gus's nickname is Bubba. He apparently hears Bev say something about there's Davis. There's Colin Davis. And he opens fire on Bubba. So we have Bubba, who survived. He was disabled from that point on because the bullet had gone into his spine. And we have Bev and, of course, Priscilla. We have three witnesses that said they saw Colin Davis there that night, that he was the shooter.
Now, I realize that eyewitness testimony can be shaky. People will all give different accounts of what happened. I truly understand that. But when you have relations with a person and you recognize them, that's completely different from, say, a stranger coming into a room, doing something crazy, shooting some people and running off. Everyone in the room that doesn't know the shooter might describe them differently. But in this situation, this is her husband, and everybody knows about their abusive relationship. She had hired security guards because she had bad vibes before this all went down. Stan knows who he is. She knows who he is. Bev and Gus know who he is. They're not mistaking their identification of him. This is direct evidence, not circumstantial. A few weeks of Colin being free, they actually rearrest him and put him in the county jail. And at this point, the media is going crazy. Lines are being drawn in the sand. And there's the Team Cullen and Team Priscilla camps here.
Well, when he's rearrested, they set no bail.
Yeah, because obviously he's a flight risk.
Yeah, he's a flight risk. And they have two people who have been murdered and two people who were attempted murders. They were originally going to have the trial in Fort Worth, which seems strange given how well known this couple is. But because of a situation with a juror who apparently went home and told their family about the case, it came up that they needed to just move the trial. I mean, this was the perfect opportunity to move the trial, so they decided to move it to Amarillo, Texas. And this worked in the defense's favor, did it not?
Well, yeah, you have Cullen with many business ties and friends up there, whereas Priscilla has nobody. This is more old money oil folks up there who respect Cullen. This change of venue only helps him.
And connected people. And these are people who are willing to be seen in public with Cullen.
While he's going through this trial, most of the accused, they will be brought out in shackles. They will be put back in a jail cell in between recesses of the court. Whereas Cullen gets to hang out in a meeting room with the Dallas cheerleaders eating steak. This is how he's treated. The press interviews him. People stand around the courtroom waiting to get autographs from him. It's just an insane circus. Meanwhile, the media is not too nice to Priscilla, going with pretty much all the whatever the defense is saying about Priscilla. They're slandering her in the papers. They're talking about drug-driven orgies and stuff. And it's a complete character assassination of Priscilla.
She had been a user of Percodan, and they said that's how she ended up hanging out with the seedier people, with the drug dealers, because she needed the Percodan. And they also showed how Percodan, you know, using this expert witness they brought on board, could cause her to be confused about who she really saw. The trial will conclude on November 17th, 1977, and the jury will find him not guilty. And it took them less than 5 hours to deliberate.
Now, if you're wondering how this could happen, Cullen got one of the best defense lawyers in the United States. And his name was Racehorse Haynes.
Richard, yeah. Racehorse Haynes.
He's good at his job, that's to say the least. He character assassinated Priscilla. He brought every single thing into question. He kind of had two theories going. The first one was Priscilla, because they had these raging drug parties, that this was a biker gang or a drug deal gone wrong, and the shooter was just some random assailant from a gang. Or it was actually Priscilla who perpetrated this entire frame job against her husband, which I gotta take a second on that. Like, to accuse her of murdering her own 12-year-old daughter, her current boyfriend, and shoot at two friends. I mean, either they're all in on this or she's just gone off the hook here, but she's able to get two other people to believe that it's her ex-husband when one of them's been shot. I don't understand how they paint this weird picture that it was her. I can understand a little bit of the theory that it might have been a drug deal gone wrong or a biker gang or something to that effect, but nothing was stolen from the house. Nothing was missing. Nothing was ransacked. You know, $100,000 artwork. You have money. You have all these things. There's nothing missing from the house. And Priscilla actually doing it herself. I know that parents are capable of murdering their children, but in this case, why she would kill her daughter, her boyfriend, and then somehow gun down one of her friends and make it look like her ex-husband, that just doesn't make any sense to me. But that's what the defense paints, and the jury buys into it. They're still going through their divorce proceedings, and apparently Collins not getting the good end of the stick from the judge that's presiding over their divorce. This doesn't make him too happy.
Yeah, the judge is Judge Ideson, really being more fair to Priscilla in the case. Davis doesn't seem to like that too much. And 1 year later, Colin Davis is back in court. And the reason is because the FBI had recorded him paying someone after seeing photographic proof that Judge Ideson had been murdered. So he paid this person $25,000.
It was a friend of his named McCrory, right?
His name was David McCrory. And so he pays this $25,000 and they have him on audio tape. It sounds like he's saying that he wants other people to be murdered.
He's giving a list of like 15 to 20 people he wants dead. And he's being shown a photograph of the judge who's bound and tossed in a trunk of a car and has been shot to death. And he's approving of this. Yeah. Murder for hire. Not just a murder for hire, but actually paying for a job well done.
So they have David McCrory as a witness. They have the FBI as witnesses. And they have Colin Davis on tape. It seems like an open and shut case, right? Well, he will reach out and once again get this lawyer for hire, Richard Racehorse Haynes, who I think really can't wait to take this case on because this is what he does. He only takes on crazy cases.
High profile, big money, big stakes.
He had been paid $250,000 for just his services in the first trial. The law firm itself was paid $1.5 million. But in this second trial, Haynes will ask for $2 million for himself. And he will get it.
Yeah. Now, they have so much evidence against him. They have him on tape. They have McCrory. They have the FBI agents. He cannot deny that it was him meeting with him. He cannot deny that he was there. They have it all documented. So what on earth could his defense be?
In the first trial, they just destroyed Priscilla's character. So in the second trial, once again, Priscilla factors into it pretty heavily because in the end, they're making the argument. I mean, they have to bring Cullen onto the stand. This trial really doesn't go in his favor for most of the way. Haynes has tried everything. He's pulling in all kinds of experts and other witnesses and trying to discredit the prosecution's witnesses and their stories. But really, it all kind of changes when Colin gives testimony. They lay out this conspiracy theory where it was Priscilla who had hired killers. And that's what Colin thought he was dealing with, were these killers that were going to actually get him in the end. But by paying them and working with them, he was trying to get them to come over to his side and testify against her and reveal this plot, which would help him in divorce court.
So he was working with, playing along with this whole conspiracy to get these people to show that she's a bad person and be on his side during the divorce.
Now, the reason he says that he was working for the FBI in this instance, is what he's saying, is because he received a call from an agent named James Acree. And he said this person told him that this was going to happen, that there was this plot to frame him. And he said, just play along because, you know, the FBI is on your side. We're going to take care of it. So when he was paying the $25,000, whatever he was doing, he thought he was working with the FBI.
Yeah, that's his defense. So he doesn't deny that it's him talking to McCrory. He doesn't deny that it's him paying the $25,000. He says that's all part of the ploy, the conspiracy.
Anyway, it's actually sort of a complicated trial, but all that you really need to take away from it is that they were able to spin this whole thing back around to where once again, oh, come on, why are you picking on Mr. Cullen here?
The rich guy's getting thrown under the bus again.
Yeah. I mean, once again, it comes down to his wife who's trying to steal all of his money is trying to get rid of him one way or the other. She's trying to ruin his reputation. She's trying to take all his money. She already took his house. So she's trying to ruin him. And now he's got a former, he's got this guy that he knows, McCrory, who's trying to ruin him too. McCrory had testified for the defense in the first trial. And now he's working against them. So it's betrayal.
Yeah, McCrory. Why would he flip-flop like that? It takes a few days before the jury comes back, and it's a hung jury, right? Eight jurors are saying he's not guilty, and four are saying he's guilty.
They can't reach an agreement, and it's deadlocked. And that's the end of the trial, so the judge declares it a mistrial.
Apparently, this is a huge blow to the prosecution and the FBI. They were embarrassed and dragged through the mud, so they don't consider retrying him.
So let's talk about this. Cullen Davis, two trials, not guilty, and the second one is a mistrial. What say you, Justin? I mean, is this is what happens, right? If you don't have enough proof, you need to leave the person alone.
I'm all for not sending the wrong person away. I'm all for preventing wrongful convictions. You call me a bleeding heart, whatever. Even a guilty person, if they don't prove beyond a reasonable doubt, I'd prefer somebody to walk free than an innocent to go behind bars. But in this case, you know, from the murder, they weren't able to find the murder weapon. And they weren't able to find circumstantial evidence tying him to the crime. But they had direct evidence, which was eyewitness. And as I already said, it's people that knew him and recognized him. This isn't a mistaken identity, and I don't care if they're on drugs or not. Also, the drug deal gone wrong doesn't really make a lot of sense. And Priscilla perpetrating the crime doesn't make any sense either.
Yeah, I don't know how she could shoot Bubba, and then Bubba would say, yeah, it wasn't her.
And she shot herself, too. I mean, I know that people can inflict wounds upon themselves, you know, whether it be, like, cut themselves, whatever, but shooting yourself with a gun in the chest, that's death. I mean, if she shot, you know, she had, like, a graze wound on one of her arms or something, I could understand that idea, but you don't shoot yourself in the torso or in your guts. That's what kills you. I wasn't there, but he absolutely got away with murder in that first trial. And I think his behavior, his lashing out, his anger issues, his need for control and possession of whether it be the house or Priscilla made him snap. And he just had enough money to hire the best lawyer to get out of this. To emphasize hindsight 2020, he's hiring a hitman to kill the judge in his divorce trial because his divorce isn't going his way. Now, whether he was playing along or not, somebody showed you a picture of a dead body, of a dead judge. I don't think that would be a, oh, cool, yeah, I'm going to say what you want me to say kind of situation. That's a, holy crap, this is real. There's a dead judge, and it could be pinned on me. So the fact that he was willing to do a hit on a judge tells me that he was probably very willing to kill a little girl, kill his wife, kill anyone in the house.
I think when we look at the evidence, we find a lot of motive here. On July 30th, Judge Idson had informed Cullen that he could not make any business decisions without his approval. That meant the entire company came to a standstill.
All the assets were frozen, and his brothers were pissed because the company started losing money by the day because he wasn't allowed to move assets around because he could have tried to shelter them because Priscilla was going to get a large percentage.
Another curious thing that happened was Dee, which was Priscilla's oldest child, had met with Cullen the day of the murders. This was August 2nd of 76. And she was talking to him about being at school and saying, hey, I need to know what my allowance is going to be like. And he said, you really need to talk to your mother about this. And he said, don't go tomorrow, go tonight, go to the house tonight and talk to her about it. I guess fortunately for her, she already had plans. So she didn't go home that night, despite his insistence that she do so. I see it as kind of fishy. And also, I think the giveaway in the second trial is the fact that when he was arrested, you'd think he'd say, no, 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 I was working with the FBI. He never discloses that. And it just seems fishy that he, at no point did he ever call in the FBI for help if he thought he was working for them.
No, I mean, he sees the body of a dead judge, and that's cool. That's fine. No red flags there. And, oh, here's a list of at least 13 more people that you can go take care of for me. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Somebody had just posted about Tim, I think his last name is Labasis, from As I Lay Dying, the lead singer of that Christian metal band, who was arrested for hiring a hitman to kill his wife. And he just spent several years behind bars, and they had less evidence against him hiring a hitman. I mean, he was hiring an undercover cop to kill his wife. Whereas I guess in Cullen's situation, because McCory was sort of a middleman or something, like, it just, I don't know how that fell apart, but money talks.
And what's really strange is even many years later, when Cullen is asked about this whole $25,000 and the dead judge, he says he doesn't even recall why he handed the man $25,000.
Yeah, he says, I don't know what that was for. Now, I mean, I get it. Like, he's so rich that, you know, what's 25 grand? But I think if I'm meeting somebody in a Coco's parking lot and handing them 25 grand and talking about a dead judge, that might be sort of suspicious, or I might have some sort of recollection of what I was paying that man for. After the second trial, Judge Eidson will step down and Cullen will get a new judge to finalize this divorce. And Priscilla will walk away with, I think, $3.5 million as opposed to the half of his estates. Cullen will get his house back and Priscilla will have to move out. In the 1980s, there was a downturn in the economy, especially in the oil industry, which would severely impact his company, and him and his brother would end up having to foreclose to some of the banks.
Their worth was estimated at like $500 million in 1982, but within the 80s, it all went downhill. I guess they ended up $200 million in the red.
So they ended up owing, losing everything. His beloved mansion would turn into a Mexican restaurant. And I think currently it's a church, right?
Yeah, the restaurant, there were several restaurants that were attempted at the mansion, but they didn't work out. And they say that they just didn't get the traffic. I guess it's too off the beaten path. Who wants to go eat at a restaurant where people were murdered? And then it became a church. And then after that, it became an event center, which it still is. In fact, we've heard from some people who have attended weddings there. Now, Colin Davis, at some point, became a Christian.
He found God and became a missionary. And he travels around praying and bringing supplies to the less fortunate.
Now, if you remember, early on we talked about Stanford Farr, who was dating Priscilla at the time that someone, possibly Cullen Davis, opened fire on them. His son was living in Kansas City and drove down to meet with Cullen Davis. And it's very strange because there are lawsuits involved between families.
Wrongful death civil suits.
Despite this, Stan Farr's son, John, still wanted to meet with him. People that know John, you know, some people supported him and other people thought this was just plain crazy. It just didn't make any sense. He said, you have that need for revenge. You're angry. You know, his father was killed, most likely by Cullen Davis. And yet here he is meeting with him at an attorney's office in Texas. And he says that this calmness overtook him. he started thinking about forgiveness. And this is something that we've talked about before, but some people believe that when you forgive and you let your anger go, it aids in the healing. It's not as though it lets that person off the hook. It's something you need to do for yourself. And what's strange is they didn't just meet once, they met twice. And when they met again, John ended up staying the night at Davis's place.
I thought the conversation was a little weird because Davis says he also forgives, which I don't know if I take that as a sign of guilt or what, but Davis's statements are really odd during their conversations, and you can find some of them online.
Yeah, I don't know. I think when I heard him talking about forgiveness, I think it's more of a, I'm innocent, and these people accused me of all these horrible things, but I forgive them because I'm a Christian. And he has always maintained his innocence. So I'm wondering if any of you out there believe he didn't do it. Because as they insinuated at trial, this could have been just revenge or retaliation against Davis by Priscilla. That's what one of the accusations was, that, oh, it was someone else. But then she said, okay, everyone, let's just say it was him because he needs to pay for what he's doing to me.
I don't think people would be on board, especially when there's a dead child involved. I think they'd want justice against the person that actually did the shooting.
Right. But this seemed to work in Texas.
Yeah.
And so I wonder, what is it about Texas at this time, back in the 70s, where this works? Because I have a feeling that if you did this today, even in Texas, I don't think it would work.
You can say it was a sign of the times. You can say that there was a class difference or us against them mentality. I wonder if people just liked him enough that they didn't really care that he might have done these heinous things, or that she was so horrible that she brought these things upon herself.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loreau, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.